Welcome to the Sharon Fitzmaurice podcast and episode 100 today. And we have Nicholas Rehan, a personal and professional relationship coach who supports individuals to build strong, healthy, and sustainable relationships. Nicholas started coaching in 2017 and has trained with one of the world's leading coaching schools, the Co-Active Training Institute, accredited by the International Coaching Foundation. Nicholas is also trained in nonviolent communication, a framework for resolving conflict through empathy, honesty, strength, and compassion. You are so welcome, Nicholas.
Thank you, Sharon. I'm excited to be here.
I'm delighted. So we can tell from your accent, which is not very strong, but that you were born in Burgundy in France. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, I come from a family of farmers and wine producers.
Wow, that is amazing. So in Ireland, we're a lot of farmers here as well, but I don't think there's many wine producers, Nicholas, more wine connoisseurs. They like to have the sup of it, we say here.
Yes. Yeah, it's a particular world to grow up in, actually, and it's very, really very much part of who I am.
That's amazing. What was it like growing up on a farm as a young boy? What would you do every day? Was there certain things that you had to do, like chores or certain jobs when you got up in the morning?
Yes. Yes, so my dad was a wine producer, and so and my mom came from a more the farming world. So I grew up more into the wine world, and basically my holidays were all about the working in the vineyards and doing whatever activity that needed to be done to make sure that the vineyards were was growing as you intended to be.
Beautiful. I have this romantic notion of you running through the vineyards as a child. Did you actually, the way we see it, I've never seen wine produced, in person, but we see people with their bare feet stamping on the grapes. Does that still happen, Nicholas?
So I've never seen it actually, because we had it was a bit too big to be able to do that. So what we had is we had a specific tool, I don't know the name in English actually, that we would use, like a plastic tool that we would use to do that actually. So it was a lot easier.
Wow, that is amazing, isn't it? I suppose, again, until we see something in the works, we have an idea about it. And that brings me, I suppose, lovely into relationships, that we have an idea of what a relationship should be. We have relationships with ourselves, with other people, with our world, with our work, with our environment, with our past, with our present, and with our future. And sometimes it comes from a perspective of what has happened in our lives. So, in your young life, you unfortunately lost your mom at a young age.
Yes, at I was 12, actually. Yes.
Very, very young. I'm so sorry.
That's all right. So, but it did teach me a lot though, and I always say, obviously I missed my mother, and I missed her for a very long time, but I also acknowledge how much I learned from this experience, and how it kind of shaped me through to who I am really.
What was it like as a 12-year-old, losing your mother? Because I know as an adult now you can look back and you have an idea about the lessons or you understand what the emotions were. But as a 12-year-old boy, what was that feeling of losing your mother?
Yeah, it's quite particular. So, I think maybe I can give you a bit more context to so you understand where I come from. So, I'm closer to my family, to my mother, in terms of character, in terms of personality. She was the sensitive one, and she was the person that was, let's say, with who I could connect more easily. And my father and my brother at the time were more it was a bit more complicated. They had a stronger character, a bit more very much into similar to people that come from the farming world, people that are close to the land. I don't know if you know any farmer or any people
Yes.
like this. They're not the the most they're not the people that have it easiest to talk about emotions and to talk about what their needs are and things like that, right? So it's not really the education that they have. I think it's part of that. So, but my mother naturally was very good with that. And as I was more into the soft side, then I connected with her more easily. So it leads to the question that you asked, that is how do you experience this when you're 12 years old? Well, basically, I lost someone that I was very much connected to, and someone that was my compass basically in life. And that means that from then on, it was me and by myself, right? Because I couldn't really talk about it with the rest of my family, so I was very much alone in this.
Yeah, and you hear that a lot from people. There might be an element of other personalities in the family being more practical and just getting on with things, and that the emotional side, especially in children, is sometimes ignored, or they're not asked how they're feeling, or because children sometimes don't know how to express those emotions. They're sad, I miss my mother. But it's lovely that you have that beautiful connection with your mother, that you have the sensitivity as she had. So how did that impact your life then after you lost your mom, and not having that emotional connection with, the rest of your family?
Yeah, so it was it brought a lot of challenges, obviously, not being able to talk about what was happening in my head means that you keep it a lot for yourself and you try to deal with it by yourself. What happened is that I just internalized all this, and I chose to, it was harder to be myself, essentially. I was very different. I'm still very different from the rest of my family. So, what happened is I just tried to be like them, and I tried to be someone else, essentially, because I tried to fit, right? That's the consequence of, I'm different. I don't fit in there, but I can't talk about it. So what happens is, well, I don't feel like I can talk about it, And so what happens is I'm gonna try to fit in there, and I'm gonna just change myself to do that.
And I suppose it's a coping mechanism, isn't it? After the, especially when you're a child and losing a parent in particular, is to fit in and act the way everybody else is acting so that you're not feeling different, even though inside you're going, well, I have all of this going on inside me, but nobody is asking me about it. So where do I go with that? Did you receive any form of counseling or anything or support at all, Nicholas?
So I did later. I think to your question about it's a normal reaction. I think it depends. It depends on your personality. I was very conflict avoidant. I saw how people behaved and how they were into like friction, and because that's still a part of my family, they into very much conflictual relationships, and I saw how it hurt me, and I didn't want to hurt people that way, so I went the other way, which was avoiding conflict by trying to be like them and not respecting that. And it leads to your second question, which is counseling. I did that for 10 years, up to a point that I was so disrespecting myself so much, and I was trying so much to fit into whoever people wanted me to be, that I went into depression, right? And that's how I realized, okay, that's probably not the way then. And that's when I started, looking at psychology, getting the advice from a counselor, and all that, right? To kind of understand what was going on, understand how I could cope with that in the first place, because I think first, before even trying to, change what you're doing wrong, it's also kind of how do you cope with that, right? And then after that, you're working on, setting yourself on the path to being better, feeling better, and et cetera.
And I always say, and I like to believe this myself, because I also went through depression, and depression is being tired of pretending to be somebody else and really wanting to come back to being your true or authentic self. But I think when you have suffered for so many years, like losing your mom at 12, you didn't grow into the person you wanted to naturally become, sensitive and open, and communicating with others in a loving way, instead trying to fit in with family and other people and avoiding that conflict, and being able to speak your truth. Was it a huge, I suppose, awakening for you, a realization when you went to counseling, Nicholas, to have somebody listen to you and explain to you about all of the avoidance, about of the suppressed emotions? Was it like you could take a breath of fresh air and just breathe this sigh of relief once and for all, somebody
Yes.
sees me.
Yes, I think the biggest relief is to understand that there is another way. That it doesn't have to be this way. And I think for me it was the best realization. I didn't use counseling for 10 years after that. I did the work by myself. But for the year or so that I used a counselor, it helped me really realize that, to sort what's true from what's in your head, right? And to understand and to make that filter, to make that sorting by yourself, to teach you to do that by yourself is essential, and it's the first step, really. And then after that, while you get better at it, then you can start working on yourself.
Beautiful. So, what was the one most positive thing that you learned about the experience through the counseling and realizing who your true self actually was or is?
I think through this experience, really, it was more about the mechanism. It's realizing that the mechanism that I've used for the past 10 years actually hurts me, right? That's the biggest realization. Trying to fit in whatever situation and putting so much pressure on me to do that is it's I thought it was good for me. I believe it was good for me, and then I realized that actually it's hurting me, right? It was the biggest realization to me. Then after that, it's all the complexity of how do you behave then? What do you do then, right? If you don't avoid conflicts, if you don't try to fit, what do you do, right? And the whole question, okay, so you need to learn about yourself. You need to learn actually what do you like? What do you stand for? What are your values? What do you not like? What values you just can't support, right? So you need to learn all that. And I think maybe in hindsight, more than at the time, but in hindsight, I think it's exciting because then you're like, there's a me inside there that I can learn about, And it's so exciting to be like, okay, there's so much that I can learn now. Let's do it, right? And I think that was the next 10 years after that.
Wonderful. I love it. And even when you're speaking about it, you can hear that excitement, that remembrance of the excitement of, and it's building that relationship with yourself. And I remember years ago, Nicholas, I was speaking at a school of young people about 16 or 17 years of age. And I asked them, the first question I asked them was, what is the relationship with yourself? And they all burst out laughing. They thought this was hilarious, because their interpretation of a relationship was fancying somebody or really liking somebody, somebody outside of themselves. And I said, but how do you actually feel about yourself?
Yeah.
And they didn't know how to answer that
And I
question.
think if you did ask me at that time when I was 15, I would not have been able to answer that question for sure. I think it's not all bright, obviously. There's a lot of brightness in it. There's also some hard choices to make, right? Because I knew that there was a lot that I had to learn about myself, and I think I was definitely excited about it. I also knew that I had to make hard choices to allow myself to do that, right? And that was to leave the environment I was in and to explore, like to take myself, move myself to somewhere else that I didn't know anything about. To leave my comfort zone, in order to be able to do that journey, to start that journey. This was a hard choice to make, right?
Yes. Sometimes we talk about that comfort zone, which is not very comfortable at all, but it's what we know. There's a saying in Ireland, better the devil you know than the devil you don't. So even though we may not be comfortable in that situation or environment, it's the fear of the unknown, the fear of where you're going. But also quite exciting as well, Nicholas, to say, I have this huge opportunity in front of me to discover myself and a whole new way of being and living the life I now want to live. What was the hardest thing about doing that?
To believe in my decision. I think like I could make the choice, I could make the decision, but I was constantly challenged because I was living in a very traditional environment, people there didn't talk at the time about wellness, well-being. If you had a depression, they didn't even know how to handle that. And I'm not even especially talking about my family, but like my whole environment there, right? And so that was challenging in that sense because no one would understand really why I felt the need to get out. And everyone was like, but this is an amazing environment to grow up in. Yes, it is. It can sound idyllic, but it didn't fit me. And that's why, like, I think the most challenging part was to kind of stick with that decision, because I think I was feeling very lonely in making that decision. I was just, living by myself. Like I was just going by myself. I didn't have any partner, any friends going with me. My family was not, they weren't against it, but they weren't really supporting me in like, yes, do it. Absolutely. We're 100% behind you, So it was that part that was complicated.
And a very brave choice and decision to make also. And I say to people, sometimes it takes great courage to change what you know is not right for you, but that somewhere inside that deeper feeling or sense within you, you know that you have to make it for yourself. So that brings us, I suppose, to boundaries, and your own personal boundaries. Instead of allowing yourself to be pulled in by other people's perspective or opinions, how did you strengthen your own boundaries, Nicholas?
Yeah, so that happened quite late, actually. What I understood is that whenever, because before what I was doing is when people would make fun of me or challenge my values, I would have a whole conversation in my head thinking they're not doing it on purpose. I mean, you need to kind of man up and get comfortable with it, and I think the biggest saboteur in this was if I say something, they will convince me it's coming from me. And I think, like, just I still remember that, right? And so it took me some time, really. I think it took me until I started learning about nonviolent communication. And there are a few things in there that just kind of triggered it, right? I think, I don't know if you know the book Marshall Rosenberg wrote. I read it about like three or four times, I think. And understanding that you have values, they are you, and when someone steps on it, then it's for you to make sure they're respected, right? Then there's another thing that really struck me is you're not responsible for those feelings, right? You're responsible for your own feelings, and that's it, right? What you have is a potential responsibility for fulfilling others' needs, but you don't have to. If it doesn't, if it doesn't, if it goes against you or your needs, then you don't have to. And that's a conversation that you have with the others, right? So it brings us to when you have someone making fun or challenging you, then the first question that you ask, okay, there's a feeling here. There's a hard feeling that I'm having, right? I'm upset by what this person is saying or doing, right? Then you understand that it's your feeling, you're responsible for it, right? And then understanding that this feeling comes from a need, okay, or a value that has been stepped on. Then you say, okay, that's the need that I have. What do I want to do with it? Do I communicate to that person? Is it that important that I want to communicate to that person that they need to request that they fulfill that need, or they need to respect that value? Or is it not that important? Because one thing you realize is when you know where the feeling comes from, then the feeling recedes, right? And then you ask yourself a question, is it that important? Right? Sometimes it is. Sometimes it isn't, right? But doing that work is changed my life, basically. Because
Amazing.
not everything has to be fought for. But when it is, you know why.
Yes, because you find a lot of people that are quite defensive about, what they believe in and what's right for them, and they have this expectation that others should believe also or should do what they believe in. Whereas you just said it there, we all have our own way of looking at things. We have our own way of believing in it to be a certain way, but that's our own belief. But I liked what you went back to is the feeling and asking yourself, is this important enough to communicate it to another person? But how do you verbalize when somebody has spoken to you in a way or hasn't respected your values or your boundary? How do you then communicate to another, Nicholas?
Yeah, so there are many kind of frameworks that you can use, obviously, and there's one that I use that is easy to remember. It's FBI, It's coming from some leadership consultancy, from what I remember. It means feeling behavior impact. Essentially, it's okay, you understand the feelings that you're having. You know, when someone did or say something that triggered a feeling in you, right? So you understand the feeling that you have, you communicate it, right? And what behavior triggered that feeling? Specific, always. It's not like, oh, you always do this. You always arrive late. You always make fun of me. You blah, 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 right? No, it's like, at this time, you said this or you did this. And you did it again at this time, at this day, and this time, at this day, right? And that's it, like very specific behavior. And you say, this is how it makes me feel. I feel, you know, disrespected. I feel upset, sad. And if this keeps going, this is the impact. I'm gonna struggle to connect with you at the level that I like to connect with you, right? And or I, you know, my trust in, you know, your capacity to do the work that you have to do will be lower. It's, you know, any kind of impact, what you think is going to be the impact. And when you communicate that, the person knows instantly where it's coming from, what it's triggering in you. And they may be defensive. That can still happen. And what's important is it's to make them understand that it's not about, you know, what are you trying to do is to make the relationship work.
Yeah.
You're doing this for the relationship to work, right? That's the first thing. You, if they're defensive and they keep being defensive, what you have to do is just repeat the same thing. This is the feeling, this is the behavior, this is the impact, until they understand, right? There's another thing that I always recommend. If they're defensive, try and understand the reason behind it. Listen. Listen to what they have to say. Okay? And try and translate, because you may be able to talk that way. They might not be able to. They might not be in touch with their feelings and their needs. So listen, 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 right? And by this, you give bigger chance to have an actual conversation that will make the relationship better.
Absolutely. And I think, and I just said it to somebody this morning, listening is probably one of our greatest gifts, you know, to listen to another person, to give them space or to hold space for them. And even though they may not be able to express on an emotional level like you or I, but they're trying to explain how they feel. And there may be that defensive or the blaming or not taking responsibility that you can see, but also that they are trying. So just, you know, I say to people, don't react when they're defensive. You know, how would you respond? You know, so I always say, take a little breath and, you know, pause for a moment and think you don't always need to react and say something immediately. Sometimes you just need to listen, give them the space so that they know they're heard. And that defense barrier will come down gently and slowly over time when you give them the space. So they can't throw it back in your face going, you never listen to me. You're always arguing back. That you've said, I've given you space, you know, and I've listened to what you've said. But there are people out there that their defense is coming from a place of fear or sadness, isn't it, Nicholas? It's not being heard, and they're fighting to be heard in relationships because I don't think they're able to listen to themselves either.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, it happens a lot, right? There are relationships that are more complicated than others. And some people are always going to be defensive. What I realize is, however, is that if you are vulnerable, They if and that they understand that, they connect with that, then it's most likely, it's more likely to allow for a good conversation, enable a good conversation. So let me give you an example here, right? I was having a conversation with someone very close to me, and they were frustrated by some, behaviors that another person was having. And but this person always complains to me, right? And it's the kind of person that it was really hard to actually get into a conversation because they would just go on and on and on, right? And at some point I just said, well, I want to help you. I'm here for you. The problem at the moment is by just coming to me like this all the time, I just can't stand it. I just can't, I don't have the mental capacity to deal with that. And I can't be in a conversation with you. Like all our conversations are about this, right? And you did this, that, and you at that at this time, this day, et cetera, et cetera. And it's hurting me. How do we do? Right? And then even if they were upset, they realized that, I was giving them a feeling
Yes.
that they connected with, and they care about the relationship that we have. So they went into, okay, I realized that. Okay. And then we went into a more kind of level-headed conversation that was easier to solve, right? But that's the point, right? If you're vulnerable, you give them a feeling and it's about you, not about, them, it's about you, then it's easier.
Yes, I love that. And I think it really comes down to the communication as well. I loved when you said that about, this person that was close to you, but every time they came, it was throwing the stuff about somebody else onto you. And you're not in a relationship with that other person, but the more you hear about it, it feels like, oh my God, I can't deal with this, listening to the whatever moans and groans about the other person. And I think a lot of people are actually quite like that. The more that we look out into the world, and we all know people in our lives that they talk about themselves and everything that's going on in their lives, and then they get up and walk away, and you're left sitting going, I never asked about how I was or what's going on in my life. You become a dumping ground for other people's issues. So then you have to take the responsibility for yourself and say, well, I'm allowing this to happen every time this person comes to sit with me and have a conversation. So it's now my responsibility, as you said, Nicholas, to open up the communication and tell them, you know what, I'm not going to do this any longer. I want to stay in a relationship with you and keep this connection, but on a level where we're both communicating, not just me having to take everything that you're saying and then you get up and walk away.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's to complete to add to what you just said. It's about what I want this relationship to work. And if I want this to work, this is what I need. Okay? And the person, essentially everyone that is in a relationship with you, they want to be. Right, but they don't realize that they're getting all worked up by their the problems and etc. So if you have a relationship that where someone is constantly complaining, for example, dumping their problems on you and you can't stand it anymore, it's not it's not that they're being wrong at saying that, at doing that, but you being wrong and not saying anything, right? So that's your role. It's your job to stand up for yourself and to say, well, I really hear you. I really want to help you. The problem is, it's taking over, that part of my life. And if I let that happen, There is a time where there's a moment where I'm not going to be able to help you anymore, and I want to keep helping you, right? So how do we do this?
I think it's the honesty, isn't it, as you said, and the feeling that we're having. And I remember reading something beautiful one day, Nicholas, about people that are arguing, it's that their two hearts are not together, you know, whether that's in a romantic relationship or friendship, family or whatever, that when it is this argument, you know, going back and over, it's that their two hearts have separated, but the two hearts are seeking the other person. They're seeking each other out and they're trying to come together without saying, I really need you to be here for me, and vice versa. And I think that's where a lot of relationships fall down. It's the lack of open communication and honesty, the lack of vulnerability, you know, and we have the defense goes up quite high, doesn't it? But it's the vulnerability and expressing your needs within that relationship, whatever that relationship is in your life.
I think there is I think there is a fear. What I hear a lot about is, when I tell people, well, you can communicate that to your partner or your colleague, right? With a relationship, the relationship is, and they will say like, oh, if I tell them that, they will use it against me, or they won't care. People like a lot of assumptions that people make or fear that they have is that the other person that is in a relationship with them, they don't care about them, right? Or they don't care about the relationship. Well, first of all, if they don't, then you would rather know it, right? And second, it's very likely that they actually do care, but they just don't know how they are hurting you. Right. And when you mentioned people are being in fights all the time, it's because for them it's the only way to communicate it. Right? It's the only way they know. This is why I do what I do. I realize that it hurts people, that conflicts are painful. And it shouldn't be really. Like I believe we should all be equipped to build relaxed, respectful, trusting relationships where we feel like at ease, fulfilled. I believe we could all do it. It doesn't take a master's degree in psychology to be able to do it. It's very easy, but we don't learn that.
No, unfortunately, we don't learn it. And again, I suppose what we're doing when we are growing up, we are dealing with everyone else's learned behavior and going through the school system and then mixing with other kids our own age who have dealt, like you have dealt with their own issues, emotional, traumatic, whatever it is. So we're learning from our environment, our society. But you just said it there, Nicholas. I work with amazing clients, and I always say it's never too old to learn something new. And the most important thing to learn is who you are right now. And just as you said, what do you like and what are your values? And they sometimes sit back, and it is the most fearful topic is to dwell on themselves because they've spent years avoiding who they were and blaming it on their past or on their relationship that went wrong and their careers and everything else. But I think when you have that questioning going on in your life, like you did, like who am I? You know, who is my true self? And that beautiful discovery and that journey of self-discovery is so powerful that it lends you now to want to help people to build stronger relationships. So the lack of relationship with your mother after she passed has brought you to this beautiful point now where you're helping others. I just think that's so beautiful.
Thank you. I think yes, it definitely brought me here. I don't know how it would have been. I will never know, but for sure it pushed me into learning about myself. I think there is something else too. There is a big amount of lying to yourself. So it's rare that people arrive at their 20s and they think, I don't know myself. It's really rare that people think that or say that. I think it's more, oh, of course I know myself. I like this, and that. And then when you dig a little bit, then you realize they either actually don't know, they think, or they're lying to themselves. They're taking example on, oh, I like, what this person does, so I'm like this, for example. And they lie to themselves to a point where they hurt, but they're like, oh, that's normal, it's okay, right? Up to a point where they can't do it anymore.
I suppose in our 20s, it's really being influenced. We're coming into that real adult stage, aren't we? And being influenced about, well, figuring out, what is it? Maybe going to college and new friendship groups, maybe moving to a new place and, moving outside of the family environment more and more and moving away from it and really figuring out yourself. And then I think as you get older, you really start to figure out what you like. I hear so many people saying, Nicholas, I'm not sure about you, they can list off everything they do not like. There is lists and lists of everything they do not like. But when you say, well, what is it? You know what you don't like, but what is it you do like? That's actually a shorter list. They're not quite sure about it. And I suppose maybe that's why they would come to you as a relationship coach to figure out what the relationship with themselves actually is now, and to figure out where are they lying to themselves, and where their greatest gifts are within them. Because I think people don't know the magic they have inside of them, Nicholas. I think sometimes they're waiting for somebody else to tell them and to be recognized and be given approval for it. And I'll say, if you go in and actually ask yourself, and you listen to and you spoke about it, the feeling of what excites me, what am I passionate about? There's your answer. Do you agree?
It's realizing that you like to do this activity, or you like to be with this type of people, or you like this type of job because it connects to this in you. This making this link is life changing, I think. Because then, I have a passion for kite surfing, for example, right? It's not technically for being in the wind and on the water with the board or anything. It's for fun. It's fun. It's fun, and it's a connection with nature, right? This is my values. Fun is one of the biggest value, right? And so I'm like, okay, let's take fun. Where can I apply this in the rest of my life?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, how can I have fun in this activity at work, in my job? How can I have fun in that relationship? How can I have fun, anywhere else? And you take that and then you apply it to the rest of your life, right? That's why it's important.
Yes. And also going back to the values, there are values change over time as well. The way you might talk to an older person and they'll say, my values now are, rest and recuperation, or gentle walks and time with my grandchildren, or reading. They have that joy of sitting back and not having to work as hard. But if we look back into somebody's life, maybe in their 30s and they're building their career up, their values are very different.
I would say they still have those values, but they're less of a priority.
Yes.
At the moment, fun sits at the top five values that I have. In 20 years, it may not be.
It may be family.
Yeah, it may be something else. Was it 10 or 20 years ago? I couldn't know. But the point is, it moves in the priority list. I think what's important is not to stay too attached to those values. You know, today is this, tomorrow is something else, and it's fine. What's important is to be aware of them, and to understand, you know, what drives you. Because often, if you're unhappy, for example, in a relationship, there's something here that is kind of, hurting, that is not connecting to your values. And understanding what value that is will help you fulfill it and have a more fulfilling relationship, right? So having always being aware of that, or what is happening in you, and okay, what is important for me right now? How can I put words on it? And there are many, many ways you can do it, right? It's not always word, it can be something else. But I think the awareness is key.
Yes, my favorite word is awareness, Nicholas. And I do a lot of awareness work on myself and working with other people, of course. But I do that through meditation and self-reflection quite a lot. So it's not sitting in the room with, singing bowls always and candles and nice music. Sometimes it's just sitting in a bench in the middle of a park and just listening to what's going on around me and coming into myself and saying, well, how do you feel right now? Is there anything going on with you that, is playing on your mind? Give yourself space and time to do that. And the reflection part would be, I suppose, my interaction with others. So I do it quite a lot in my work, and I would have a reflection piece after each I work with groups or clients. But I found myself doing it in my personal life over the last number of years also. Especially if there's been an interaction where the other person is unhappy about something, and I reflect back on it and going, did I add to the anger in that relationship in that moment, or did I add any benefit? Did I speak my truth? And it's not to blame myself or anybody else, but it's just to reflect on how can I do it better the next time.
Absolutely. How can I fulfill that value of mine better next time?
Yes, that's a nicer way to put it, Nicholas.
No, it's not a nice. I think it's more about like, because if you say, how can I do it better? It's a lot about, I mean, this is how I interpret it, right? And if I say that to myself, and I heard you talking about compassion in another talk, and that's going to link to that. I think it's if I say it this way, for me, it's putting pressure on, I want to improve, right? And if I put pressure on me for like improving, it's not going to help me, right? It's going to do the opposite, actually. So the way I think of it is, this is important to me. How can I fulfill that more next time, right? Because I know that it's going to make me happy. It's not about improving, it's about being happy.
Yeah, that's a lovely way to put it. Yes, and I can absolutely see when you say it like that. And again, it comes back to the way we perceive things or the way we say things to ourselves, doesn't it? So I always say I'm going to learn something new every single day, Nicholas, for the rest of my life. And the day I stop learning and being curious, is the day I won't be on the earth listening to lovely stories. So yes, for me, I love that. How can I fulfill my value and be more open or communicate more to myself or the person in the relationship the next time? I have it in my head, and now it's making so much sense for me, even, in particular relationships. And even just the other day, listening to somebody, and they were just talking so much about whatever it was going on in their lives. And I thought, they're not even making sense in their own head. And I was trying to find the right words to intercede or to say afterwards. And I thought there's no point because they're not listening, they're just whatever. So I actually smiled and I just sat back and listened and said, just let them do this. But are you going to sit here and listen to it forever? That was where I had to fulfill my value of valuing my time and my energy and my space.
Absolutely, and listening to yourself,
Yes.
and we are pulled in so many directions nowadays, through social media or the news or everything around us, and so it's becoming more and more important to listen to yourself, to what you need, and also to actually make the decision, learn to make the decision. This is not what I need right now, right? And B, that's where, you were talking about boundaries earlier. That's being assertive with yourself, right? Because there's being assertive towards others, that's in the relationship, but how are you assertive towards yourself in your relationship with yourself, right? So learning to do that is very important.
And I think that's really critical at the moment where people are caught up, say, with social media and with distractions from life, and asking yourself that question, how can I be spending my time and making it more valuable to me on a personal level than distracting my mind, distracting myself from how I'm feeling, and getting assertive with yourself. I think that's a really important one now. In particular for, well, for every age group, to be honest with you. I've had people in here that are 65 and they spend all day long scrolling through their phones, but
Yeah.
they have nobody to talk to.
And to be fair, we sometimes we're scared that if we too assertive with ourselves, if we push for our boundaries to be respected, then people will dislike us. But it's rather the opposite. People will thank us for the honesty, the transparency, and it can be only good for the relationship, right?
Yes, Nicholas, so much there in relationships. And I know that you work obviously one-to-one with people, but you also work with groups and organizations also. Because I think the work relationship is just another podcast altogether, isn't it? Because
Absolutely.
again, you would have a lot of people where they don't feel respected or heard or valued within the workplace. And again, it comes down to communicating their needs and, being able to stand up and speak up for themselves and being able to, come back. And again, that could come back to personality traits and what they've learned, confidence, all of that as a younger person and coming into the workforce. But all of those things can be built on, can't they, Nicholas?
Yeah, we can relearn, new ways of dealing with those situations, and it takes some time. But you know what the good thing is? At work, we have plenty of opportunities to work on that. So yes, absolutely. The work relationships are an entire world. For this, what I like about it is it has a big impact, because if you work with the leader and you help them, be better at discussing performance, giving feedback, and giving disagreement, disagreeing with someone else, with your peer, with your boss, and all those things. If you teach them, and if you help them, be better at that, then it's going to have a domino effect on all the people that they're leading as well. And because we look at our leaders to show the role model, to be the role model, and so it is going to have an impact further down the line, right?
Absolutely. I think you can't be a good leader unless you are aware, and there's your awareness again of the people that work with you and what their needs are and requirements are, and to be able to watch out for the people in your teams, in your organizations, that Everybody needs to be seen and heard and be valued. And I think that's one thing as human beings on this planet, we all need to remember, but that starts with ourselves.
And it has so much impact on what you care about as a leader, being productivity, engagement of your team, efficiency, the bottom line. It has so much impact on it, that, it's worth doing the
Yeah.
work.
Wonderful, Nicholas. If there was last one piece of advice you'd like to give on relationships before we close up the show, what would it be?
Oh, that's a hard one. One advice. I would say that if you're unhappy, if you feel stressed in your relationships and you feel there's too much friction, just start with understanding where it's coming from. There is another way. You're not yourself. You're not by yourself. You're not alone in this. There's another way. So try and start understanding, what is it that is creating this?
Listen to yourself and your needs.
Exactly.
Very
Exactly.
good. Nicholas, it has been a pleasure having you on, having this wonderful chat. Thank you for your insights. And I look forward to seeing you all over the place now that we're connected. And sharing your wonderful gifts that you're sharing with the world now. And you can check Nicholas out on his website, www.nicholasrion.com. And you'll also find Nicholas at Nicholas Rion on LinkedIn. There's so many things you cover. I would ask people to pop onto your website, to look through it, check you out, to message you if they have any questions or that they would need your support because. You can help people build stronger relationships. And it's lovely that people are actually seeking support now and they know they don't have to do it all by themselves, that they have wonderful people like you, Nicholas, that has had personal experiences in your own life that you can now share and bring in because you've learned along the way, Nicholas. And yes, you're a wonderful human being.
Thank you very much, Sharon. So yes, contact me on my website. You've got a contact form, you have my email. And I also have a guide to 10 habits for successful relationship that is downloadable for free on my website to start from. It's I found it very useful to me, so I just hope that it's useful for people that are interested. You can download it and you will be part of my mailing list and receive news from me as well. So that can be another benefit.
Absolutely. Nicholas, thank you so much for your time and your lovely energy. And to all my listeners, I look forward to connecting to you all again soon. Take care for now.